Balancing the eye and the ear with Bradley Sowash and Leela Viss. I'm so excited to have you guys both with us today. It's been a long, long time. We've been talking online with each other, and I've never actually spoken to either of you in person. So I'm really, really excited to chat with you today. So welcome, Leela, firstly. How are you going?
Good. Thank you. Nice to be
and,
here.
Yeah. And Bradley, how are you going today?
I'm great. We're in the midst of looks to be a raging thunderstorm. So this will be an added bit of excitement.
Fantastic. Well, look, we're all in different time zones and around the world, so I really appreciate you being able to be with us today. It's great fun. So we're going to be talking creativity, and I've had a couple of the last few episodes have been based on improvising and things, so this is going to be just another take on that whole idea of getting creative with your students at the keyboard, so I'm really excited about it. So I thought, why don't we just start with a little bit about yourselves, perhaps with Leela first. Can you just tell us a bit about yourselves and the teaching that you do in your studio and that sort of thing?
Great, yes. I am a mom of three boys, and I have a husband who is cooking right now for me, so I'm completely spoiled.
Excellent.
I have an independent piano studio that you can see I'm in right now, and I teach students of all ages. Today I taught my 91-year-old piano student and actually recorded her playing a duet with me, and then I'm not teaching today, but I kind of did. It's a long story. So I saw Rylan, who's working on a composition, so we didn't get out a book. We were talking about what he was going to do next in his composition, and then I had Ben coming in because he's giving his senior showcase recital and me playing Rachmaninoff and Debussy. And so anyway, I have a lot of different students that walk in my door from day to day, and they are all interested in being creative at certain levels. But that's why I call myself a creative-based teacher. Some are more than others. I'm also an organist and accompanist, and I'm really happy that Easter is now over because it's busy season. I myself am a wannabe composer and improviser, and I say wannabe because I kind of am, but could really do more, but again, not enough time.
She's modest.
Well,
I saw Bradley smiling. I was thinking, Leela's, you're pretty good. Yeah, let's face it.
And then I blog at 88pianokeys.me, so I know you've checked me out there, Tim, and I appreciate us being able to work together a lot as
Absolutely.
We are both bloggers. And I wrote the book, The iPad Piano Studio, which has been really exciting this year because it's taken off. I was just presenting at MTNA last month, sorry. And when I asked people who had an iPad, most everyone raised their hands. So it is a completely different situation than it was even a year ago, because I cannot say that that would have been the truth a year ago. And I like to present. I've been doing a lot of that lately, which is really fun. And I also enjoy working with JoyTunes, the developers of Piano Maestro, and I consult with them on a semi-regular basis. And the really exciting thing, which is really exciting about what we're talking about today, is I'm the newly appointed chair of the Creative Pianist Track at the National Conference on Keyboard Pedagogy, which you will be there as well, which is fantastic.
I can't wait. I can't wait. It's going to be so much fun.
And that's all really good news for all of us who have been waiting for some of these kinds of things to take off. So I'm very excited to be here today to talk about this topic of creativity with a little technology thrown in.
Yeah, I love that's great.
Is that enough? Did I give you enough?
I don't know how you do all of that, Leela, and have three kids and everything. It's an amazing achievement. So, thank you. It's great. All right, we'll head over to Bradley. Would you like to just tell us a little bit about yourself, Bradley?
Well, you know, I'm like a lot of musicians who make a living. I have I wear many hats, so I describe it as many small income streams that add up to a river of living. So here's a few of them. I still am a touring concert jazz pianist, but I no longer do that exclusively. For a while, that was my living when I was selling albums and playing concerts. More and more now, I'm a teacher. So I'm teaching nationwide and on Skype. and in conferences, and then with my own students. I'm kind of the specialized teacher in that that improvisation is the main focus of my studio, and I tend to focus on a little bit more advanced students when I'm working privately, even though I work on focus on all ages when I'm teaching other teachers to teach. Kind of maybe best known for my 9-book piano method, That's Jazz, my jazz piano method. But I have a brand new series out that just got unveiled at MTNA called Creative Chords. And I think it may be the first ever piano method that from day one balances reading and playing by ear in equal portions throughout. And just really excited about that. We're going to book one's out. Book two is in the pipeline and there's already plans for an entire series. And that's published by Chos, KJOS Music. So that, you know, that's a few of them. I could go on. I'm on the faculty of Suzuki Music Columbus. I work at Chamber Music Connection. I work in the Jazz Community, the Jazz Academy here in town. I'm a regular columnist for Clavier Companion, Downbeat Magazine, sometimes American Music Teacher. So you know, it's just a lot of. And I write string quartets and you know symphony pieces, orchestra pieces. I mean, I can't seem to do it enough music. One more thing, I've been learning fiddle for about 3 years. I'm beyond sucking and still not good, but I'm very pleased to have hit a point where it's not painful to listen to me anymore.
So. Kyle, I thought I was busy listening to you too. I honestly don't know how you do it. I often read your articles, Bradley, in the magazine. It's fantastic. We'll have to talk more about your method. I'm gathering you mentioned it kind of balances reading and ear kind of work. From the start, but the title has chords in it. Do you also start with chords too?
I missed a little beginning of that sentence because of distortion. Can you say it again, please?
You're just talking about your method. You call it the chord something chord method. Is that right?
Creative chords.
Yeah. So does it start with chords as well, right from the beginning?
It does. It starts with just two note chords. You know, C major two note chord, and eventually moves into triads. And but the thing is they aren't written out. They're just roots written. And then, you know, the idea is that soon that left hand could disappear altogether, so it's preparing them for that.
Yeah. Well, look, sounds great, and look, I'd love to hear more about it, but we're going to focus on the creativity side of things, and people are probably wondering why I'm interviewing the two of you together. So how did you guys come to be working together?
Let's see, yes, I will answer that. I'll start it at least. I feel that Bradley contacted me out of the blue. I was completely stunned, but he was appointed the chair of the MTNA Jazz Pop track for 2013 and asked me if I would help him, basically assist him in whatever had to be done. And of course I said, yes, that'd be great. But I look back, we have known each other for years and years, and believe it or not, the first time we met was at NCKP, and I'm thinking, I don't know, Bradley, how long ago was that? Maybe 10 years ago. And we sat next to each other. We were with a whole group of people, and we sat next to each other at a bar, and I was asking him something about the 12-bar blues, and he wrote this really cool note on a napkin about how to teach it, and I lost the napkin. So anyway,
I remember it as being in the conference hall under fluorescent lights at a table with pizza, just in case.
No, that was in Denver. That was in Denver a couple years later when you came for an A conference. So it's happened a couple of times where you've written really important things on a napkin and then I end up losing.
This is from the person that writes books on iPad apps, of course.
Yes. I know. So go figure. But we worked well together for the MTNA Jazz Pop track, and it was a lot of fun. And he brought up the idea. I don't know if he thinks maybe I did, but I remember him specifically asking if, hey, you want to do a camp? And I just remember thinking, oh my goodness, I don't think I can do one more thing. But we did, and that's how that started. I don't know if you have anything to add, Bradley.
I would add that I picked Leela very deliberately to be my co-founder and partner in this camp because because of our differences. I think we both come to a point of creativity through such different backgrounds. Leela, I always say, is a real teacher. That means she spends her Saturdays thinking about making cool cutouts for the recital theme finding better resources and baking things for the recital and just dreaming up more and more better ways to teach. And I know a lot as a lifetime jazz musician, but I'm learning from her how to convey it better. So it's a nice balance of this classically trained artist coming to creativity and this sort of ear-trained artist learning to speak to classical musicians in a way that they understand. Also, everybody loves Leela. They all like her presentations, and it's like, oh, Leela. So she's our poster child, can do it.
And look, I really like the fact that Leela, it sounds like only probably 10 years ago, maybe less, you really weren't being particularly creative in your lessons with students. This is a reasonably new thing for you, which means that I'm hoping that the sorts of things we talk about today will be instantly useful for other teachers who are in that same position. Would that be right?
Correct. I remember doing some kind of creative thing, but nothing too spectacular until I, you know what it was? It was one student walked through my door, and he was so creative and played by ear, and I was hired by mom and dad to keep him on the page. But I had so much fun with seeing what we could do with his talents creatively. And it kept me ahead of him all the time, somewhat. But I don't know, he had some special wire between his ear and his hands that not very many people have. And I didn't want to lose him as a student, and I wanted to see him grow and develop those skills as much as possible. And he is a very well-balanced musician. And, you know, he made me a well-balanced teacher. So I credit a lot to that student. And now I attract a lot more of them as well. So it's a lot of fun.
It's really interesting how just one student challenging how you do things. I think this happened with me and Pop, and probably with other teachers as well. Suddenly one student comes in and you've just got to completely change your way of thinking about things, and you become a better teacher by it. And this has become a serious kind of stream for you, which I think is fantastic. So look, I'm interested to talk about this. We've been using the word creativity, but we haven't really defined it. I'm wondering, Bradley, if you're able to just tell us exactly what we're talking about when we're talking creativity. Are we just talking about a blues scale, or what's happening?
Okay, well, first of all, I have this perception from watching your blogs and reading on Facebook that Australia seems to be way ahead of us on doing a balanced curriculum. By that, I mean teaching reading and improvisation and playing by ear. Some of this may not even make sense to your Australian listeners, but in America, really by far the predominance of piano teachers are utterly glued to the page and mostly disinterested in any style besides the masters. That is changing, but it still is far from the norm. I feel like we are, leading the charge here on the eye-ear revolution. But when I'm talking about creativity, you know, in a musical context, it can mean so many things. It can mean composing. It can mean doodling around and just exploring on the piano, sounds that hit you. It could mean the teacher playing a rich accompaniment while the student has a couple of notes that they work on top of. Friend Forrest Kinney's pattern playbooks, where he gives a nice accompaniment and then offers some notes for the student to play on. All these things are fine. Let's go to, I know you recently had Christopher Norton on. He's got the idea of putting really rich chords in the left hand so the student hears, these complex chords and eventually learns what they are. All these are wonderful and legitimate. But my take on this is very real world based practical skills. What we teach in our camps and in my books is tune based. So here's a 16-measure tune, say like George Gershwin's Summertime. And it, so it takes less than 30 seconds to play it even at a slow tempo. What we teach is how do we stretch that into a real life setting where we have an introduction, a statement of the melody, an embellished melody, improvisations off the chord changes, or maybe an enhanced return to the melody and a nice tag on it. How do you stretch that out? What chords are involved? What kind of things you can do? This is from being as a lifetime jazz musician. I want to get not so much at jazz as a genre, but as the approach is just tune-based. What, you know, right down in the trenches with how do you play a Christmas song on a gig that somebody calls for that you've sung but maybe never played before, that sort of thing.
Okay. So it sounds like you're talking a fair bit about arranging as well. So not just being able to tinkle and make up a little something, but to make that into a piece of music by elaborating and adding an intro and an ending and that sort of thing?
Correct, yeah. It's arranging on the fly, maybe with a which is not to say there's no plan, but kind of making the song conform to your plan on the fly, never doing it the same way twice, but still having, you know, some parameters. Well, the whole thing is that all my life you ask good improvisers how they do it, and they give you these answers like, oh, man, you just got to feel it. Don't you feel it? And then I'm like, when I was a kid, I was like, no, I don't feel it. How do I feel it? And I reject it. I think in the long run, I've come to think that was a kind of showing off or guarding their little corner of the music world, when in fact there's all kinds of transferable skills. You know, if you play a boogie bass in your left hand and put some licks over it, and someone runs up and says, yes, the left hand's on a pattern and the right hand's on some predictable chords or scales that will sound good with that. So there are some tricks. Let's teach them.
Yep, and it also makes, in my opinion anyway, it makes music reading easier. If they learn these patterns, they can instantly see them in music, and it just makes reading music that has those patterns in it much easier.
Let me just comment on that, Tim. That's a huge statement you just made. Improvising and doing creativity on the keys makes you a better reader. That's a shock to some people because they see the lesson time spent on creativity as a sort of a bonus or a marginalized thing. But when you spend time creating notes, you understand how they got to be on the page in the first place. In the creative process and interpretation to it. So, yeah, that's huge.
Yeah, I think it's crucial, really. And look, I know you're going to elaborate on how to actually do some of these things. So we're going to give teachers some real quality ideas that they can use in their lessons coming up. But before that, maybe Lily, you can help. What's the real benefit for students, firstly, of this approach to teaching?
Well, I think what Bradley just said, the fact that the reading makes more sense, and that's how we generally learn our languages. I'm still stuck in just English, but we learn by ear, first of all, and then we move forward and understand how to write it. And being creative with it first, as Bradley was talking, I was thinking two things. When I look up the word creativity, curiosity comes right with it. And again, you're expanding a student's mind when you're making them think beyond what's on the page and beyond what teachers tell you to do. So if you can trigger curiosity in a student, immediately they're going to ask why and they're going to explore. And I don't remember feeling that way at lessons. And I think things, like Bradley said, are changing, and we're allowing our students to do that. But yeah, they're going to be more engaged then in their music making. They're going to see a wider variety of music because they're going to want to play what they just saw somebody play on YouTube. And I still have students, and not to say that I won't, but students still love the classics.
And oh, yeah.
You know, when they play Minuet in G, then the second time around on the repeat of the first page, how can you make that different? And then introduce ornaments that way. But I think they will continue to feel like they're taking ownership of it if they're able to play somebody else's things, but also do something of their own to it. And, you know, I think we link that to interpretation, but why not link it also to what they can do beyond the page?
Mm. And I'm always interested when people quote Franz Liszt as being the one that started the concept of the recital, and particularly the memorized recital, right? And everyone agrees that that's what should be done. But we kind of forget that he was also an incredible improviser, and all these the classic romantics, even the Baroque composers, were all amazing improvisers. And so we've kind of just taken one side of learning piano, and that is you will learn the classics and you'll perform it and do it from memory and it'll be brilliant. And we've completely ignored that most of them spent at least as much time composing and improvising and mucking around with themes and things like that we just kind of ignore now. It doesn't make sense to me.
You mentioned a Baroque composer, C.P.E. Bach, wrote a treatise on the truth in which he lays out the keyboardist skills that they should be working on, and he includes accompanying, reading music, arranging, improvising as an equal list. You know, this is not a new idea. We're just trying to rebalance it.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly right. So look, we've talked about what the students are going to get out of it. I can see teachers probably listening to this and going, I don't know if I'm going to have time. What's the kind of benefit for me as a teacher in taking the time? Because I'm going to need to spend a bit of time on this. It's going to take a little bit of work. What's the benefits for me as a teacher in taking this approach?
Okay. You want to take that or you me, Leela?
I have one idea that I wanted to add on to, and when we hooked that word curious, mm-hmm. when I allow, if I have a younger student learning from a beginner's book and it's in a five-finger pattern and they've just tried to play that piece that's written there on the page, and then I'll say, well, just put your hands back over those notes and I'm going to play the teacher part and you just play what you want to. And, you know, at first you have to coax them a little bit, but to me, what I think teachers will really like is when they see the light bulb that goes on in their students' eyes, because they're like, wow, that was really cool. And really, I see that over and over again. They're excited about something that they created. And isn't that what we as teachers want? We want students excited. So if I could say one thing, that would be it. It triggers those endorphins. It makes people feel good, and then they're going to come back to lessons again and want more. All right, Bradley, go for it.
Well, I can spin off of that. There's a lot of reasons this is great for teachers, and I think we should provide them with a list on your cheat sheet or your follow up sheet there. But just to hit a few, the Leela took a long time ago the step that teachers need to take, and you could see this as a kind of threat or a wonderful change, which is that teaching creativity involves replacing the old European model of that the teacher knows all, the teacher is a master, and the student is, and so that is a necessary approach when you're trying to decipher the difficulties of notation, and you have to say this is a sharp here, and don't forget this rest, and so on. But in teaching creativity, you switch from I know everything and the student does one of shared mutual exploration. Let's try this. There's lots of saying we and let's and what she just said. You know, how would this be with these five notes in a new way, not knowing what's going to happen? So at first, for teachers, that's what makes them a little insecure because they're not sure how to teach you. It's not objective. But once you walk through that door, as you have, Tim, it's delightful. And I would venture to guess, if I may be a little bit blasphemous, that really teaching the same method year after year and the same sort of – every teacher will secretly admit that they really like teaching their 10 favorite pieces that they play pretty well is a little boring, because when you get to page 16, you already know they're going to miss the B-flat on measure 4 because every student
so
does.
True. Yeah.
So this just adds this whole element of surprises happen. It's very unpredictable, and students come up with great ideas, and you laugh, and sometimes you're befuddled. But what happens is the student recognizes that you're in there with them, and that changes the whole relationship in the studio. So one huge thing is that it's just you kind of become lifelong friends and fans of each other. Let me just throw out two more. Mm. There are riches in niches. I'm the only improvisation teacher, I think, in Central Ohio. I've had a waiting list for 10 years. English yourself just from a business point of view. It's a very crass reason, I suppose. And another one is that every student's like, why do I have to study music theory? I hate this. Why can't we just play real music? But with creativity, you're applying the music theory. You're thinking about, you know, this 5-chord resolves to a 1, and oh, he did that, and so I can too, and isn't that cool? It makes music theory not music theory, but music practicality or something. We need to replace that word theory.
Yeah, yeah, agreed. And I talk about this in my the pop piano teaching videos. It's putting music theory into practice, any of these kind of creative endeavors. So I completely agree.
And that's a terrific course. By the way, tell your listeners, I will wholeheartedly endorse that in front of everybody. That's a very cool thing you put together, a great gift to the piano teaching world.
Thank you. Thanks, guys. It's so important, because those theory books and stuff are about the worst way to inspire any student. I think we can all agree on that. Sorry if you've written theory books in the past, Leila. No, it's so good to hear it, because it's exactly the sort of thing that I think about too. So I'll put a list on the show notes of some other points. I'm sure you guys could be able to pop down a list of you know, real pros for students and teachers. So the show notes for this, don't worry about taking notes of any of these ideas. The show notes will all be at timtopham.com/episode5. So they'll take you straight to all the links, and anything we talk about here will all be there. So look, I think, guys, it would be awesome to talk about some of these ideas. Can we start with some real tricks that teachers can use? I mean, obviously this is, we've already talked about it, a bit of a lifelong endeavor. But have we got some ideas of things that teachers who are listening to this can go, all right, I'm going to try that next week with my next student, or that sort of thing? I don't know who wants to take this one.
Can I take that, Leila?
You can.
Go for it. Okay. So first of all, I write about these things regularly, sort of easy, digestible tips in Clavier Companion magazine, a great magazine here in America. I suppose it's available everywhere. I don't know.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, they also do the iEarRevolution.com is my blog, but it's exclusively, I just resources there, and lest you think I'm promoting, and there's nothing for sale on that blog at all. It's just completely an idea sharing place, and so there's, you can drill down there. But here's just a couple to get started. Creativity can be defined as rearranging things rather than inventing things. People get hung up on that. It's, you know, nothing's really new. It's, you do things in a new way. And so in a musical context, the easiest way to begin improvising is to embellish or change the melody. You play and then we begin embellishing that. And here's just a couple really simple ways to do that. Simply repeating notes is, it can open up doors. Nothing really changed there, just some, is that coming through okay with your headphones?
Yep.
Or the piano? Okay, mm-hmm. So repeating notes, that's so simple. Fill notes is a thing I like to teach. Anytime you have an interval larger than a second, you have an opportunity to fill that interval. So here I'm playing This Old Man in the Key of C, G, G, gosh, there's an F in there. It's so easy. Listen to this. You're just filling in some of those holes. Oh, you see, that's the way I like to teach in the studio. They're very, very practical little tips that are achievable. Let me just give that a context, though. Let's say there are other fill notes that the same idea can be applied to a much more sophisticated tune. I'll fill here. Same idea in chords. So these are not limited to nursery rhymes, but we might introduce them that way. Look, another one is neighbor notes. So simple, down and back. Um, Okay, I'll tell you that in another context. For one, I mean, you know, Phil, the Ember notes are a really, really cool thing to do. I'll use a lot of neighbor notes on this little jazz thing here for a minute to show you what I mean. So I'm going to take a lick. Very boring. Now I'm going to use a few neighbor notes. So, you know, I'm just decorating some stuff. So these can all be made in a big way or a little way.
And so you say for teachers that have never done any of this this sort of thing before, could they take for example, let's say, you know, they're in a method book, they're at level one or two, there's a really simple piece, the students kind of finish learning it, and instead of going, all right, let's turn over the page and start the next one, it's like, all right, let's start exploring it a little bit more. Is that the kind of way you would approach it?
No, it will only work if you use my books. No. No, totally kidding. Yeah, it works on, yeah, absolutely. And that's a wonderful thing to do with a method book. Yeah, yeah, and it can be done on any tune. In fact, I regularly stress that take the concept. I even tell my own students, this Bradley So Wash song is a dumb song. It's just a song. I don't care if you ever play it again. What I care about is, did you get the improv concept, put it in your bag of tricks, and be able to pull it out in the future? So you want a few more?
Yeah, absolutely.
So here's a fun thing. I get as a improvised specialist, I get requests from students of all instruments for help on organizing their solos. So a guy says, "Hey, Mr. Sowash, I have to play an alto saxophone solo in my jazz band. What notes should I use?" And they want me to tell them about a fancy bebop scale or something. But what I usually say is, "What notes are in the melody?" And they say, "I don't know. The trumpets play the melody." And I said, well, then why don't you figure out what those notes are, because those are the notes in your improvisation. So I call that melody mix-up. Without any deep knowledge of theory, any notes that are in a tune can be reworked. Let me show you an example of that. There's this Ellington tune that where it goes, don't get around much anymore. That's no particular scale, but what great notes to use on that C chord. See, you know, the material's already right there in front of you. So that's a big secret. Mix the melody and notes up.
And that's what Christopher Norton was talking about in episode two when I was talking to him. He, as you know, takes that approach of, well, here's the original piece of music. Let's just use those notes, and they're often very simple, 3, 4, 5 notes. Let's use them to improvise on. It's a great starting spot. So that's melody mix-up, you call that. I like it.
Yeah. Just a little levels of a complex melody makes a complex mix-up. Everybody, all your guests have talked about the pentatonic scale. I'm a big fan of it. I have a saying that goes like this, when in doubt, pent out.
I like it.
If you're lost and you can figure out the key, you can find those five notes and you'll probably sound like you fit in.
Just to make sure everyone's clear, can you just explain how to find those five notes if we're in a whatever key it is?
You see, you're a real teacher. You're like Leela. That's good. That's what I mean about keeping me on track. That's excellent. Yeah, so I just think of it as a major scale with no fourth or seventh note. So here's C, D, E, skip the F, G, A, skip the B. And that's your major pentatonic. And just like there's a natural minor that would be related to C, which would be a natural minor, you actually use the same notes. So no Fs or Bs. The formula in a major key is 1, 2, 3, 5, 6.
Okay.
And
1, 2, 3, 5, 6.
You could do so much with that. Here's a kind of an Art Tatum approach to it. Here's more of a Chick Corea approach to it. Here's a folk song approach to it, you know. Same five notes, they're just great. They just work all the time, you know, and they're not complete. There's always other things to do, but you want to know this. I have a quick story I'll tell you, then I'll shut up. I have I had a student in my group improv classes who played flute festival, and he had just purchased an Irish flute, even though he wasn't familiar with that instrument, but it was the same fingering. the band saw him and said, ah, look, you're an Irish flutist. And they pulled him up on stage in front of a live audience. What's your name? Steve. Okay, Steve, play with us. And then they went off into a tune. He came back and he told me this story. He said he was thrilled and terrified at the same time. And he thought, what did Bradley say? When in doubt, pen out. He figured out they were in a key of D. He figured out his five notes. He goofed around on it. The crowd, who was kind of full of Guinness and good party moods, totally enjoyed what he did, and he had a ball because, you know, he got him out of a bind. So that's just a great tip. You got to know those five notes. All improvisers use it in every culture in the world.
And as you say, my previous two or three guests, whoever, have all talked about pentatonic scales. So I think if there's one major takeaway for teachers, if you haven't previously explored the pentatonic scale, then that would be the thing to do. Now, before we go on to Leela, because I know you've got some great ideas too, just on that improvising, you made, like, that was a great little demo of a few things there. Just that folk song one, I thought, now that's probably the most achievable for a teacher to experiment with. But what were you doing in your left hand? And how do they think what to do in their left hand?
I did a couple of things there, mostly fifths, I think. I was playing A minor, A, E, F, and G. I can't remember exactly. So I just played diatonic chords. It happened to be an A minor, and I used A, C, D, E, G. But I can go anywhere. There's the E, there's the D. So just lots of white key fifths.
Yeah, and it's a great key to work in because it is all white keys, isn't it? So you can just explore it to your heart's content, can't you?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I also did a little thing that you mentioned, our Tatum thing. It was really the same thing. It was C, D minor, and E minor. I played C, G, E, D, A, F, and E, B, G, but I did them in a boom chick way, like this. C, D minor, E minor, D minor.
Yeah. Just showing off now, aren't you?
That's my last name. I have a student who calls me Bradley Show Off.
So. I like that. I'm going to use that one for sure. So now, Lily, you've got some other ideas, I think, on that you've, you know, explored carols and things like that. Is that right?
You know, I wouldn't say I have other ideas. I think what happens is I kind of panic and think, ah, how am I going to do it all? Because I do have students that want to play the classics and play in festivals. And so I try and keep it a well-rounded lesson, but sometimes I just can't get to everything. And yeah. I think for my sake, I've developed units or scenes that I'll stick with, and then everybody will do something the same. For instance, when we were talking about lesson books or method books, I had something called the Lesson Book Bash, and this is just because I really don't like those books. And I say that in a really nice way because they are helpful tools, and they keep us on track of what needs to be covered. But I thought when, you know, it was January, like, oh my goodness, I got to get these kids through this book a little bit faster. So I decided to challenge them. How fast can we go through things? But then as we go through them, they still have to learn them and they have to know what's going on. But I wanted them to pick their favorites and then they would have to be creative with those. And that was a great way for me to, you know, setting those little rules for myself and for them. Then we incorporated creativity that way. I think as teachers we get, you know, it's overwhelming. Okay, we got to think about pitch reading and, you know, what is a chord? And, oh, that hand position, you know. Technique takes a lot of our time. Yeah. And so if you can find little tidbits of ideas and try and implement them, you know, through 6 weeks. You think, man, you know, that seems way too long, but, you know, you got to chop it up into little bite-sized pieces. And the reason why I had listed Christmas carols, I have students prepare music for a Christmas recital, so they're usually very busy working on those, and so there's not a lot of other activities or assignments for them. So then I will give them a lead sheet of one of their favorite tunes and we'll talk about, you know, how to add the left hand chords to it. So it just gives another assignment when they're already busy working on something else, and it keeps me feeling like, yes, I'm plugging them into that creativity mode. So I would say my tips are for the most part, if you know and you're concerned about not being able to fit something in a lesson, then try and keep with a plan for your whole studio so that everybody will do something at the same time. I'm just wrapping up a happy birthday unit, which worked really well, and I'm going to be talking more and more about that, blogging about it. But I just keep telling my students, what is the one song you will probably have to play the rest of your life on a regular basis? Everybody has birthdays. You got to know happy birthday. But that would be my encouraging word for teachers who are trying to implement a lot of Bradley's ideas. Make yourself do it by making a formula or a plan for yourself.
I'm thinking, because I like concrete kind of structural ideas and things. So I'm thinking for teachers, they could perhaps choose one of your suggestions, and we'll have these on the show notes. So let's say it's the melody mix up, and perhaps mm-hmm. they could just say, all right, I'm just going to try this just for 1 week with all my students, three students, doesn't really matter. And I'm going to take one piece that they're already learning and they know reasonably well, and I'm going to try the melody mix up. I'm going to take the melody notes of the right hand and get them, while I play the accompaniment, I'm going to get them to explore some sounds. And that would be a great start. It's not too kind of scary or terrifying for anyone, and it kind of just starts that chain going, and then they could try to pent out or whatever else they want to do, I guess. Does that sound like that would work for teachers, do you think?
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what I would recommend. In fact, before you say anything, Bradley, I just want to, Tim, since you brought that up, you could have everybody do the same thing. Like, everybody's going to do melody mix-up, put it on the board somewhere, because Bradley and I often talk about this. He'll come up with a really good idea, and I'll say, Bradley, we need a name for that. Because if you have a name for a tool, you will remember to use it. It'll be in your back pocket. You can pull it out, and you can use it.
Totally agree.
But one of the, I think we're going to talk about apps for a little bit, but one of my favorite apps, which I think a lot of people have seen this one already, is the Decide Now app. This one right here. So one way to use that, I've got all those different repeated notes, melody mix-up, fill notes, retrograde, neighbor notes, and your students could spin and decide which one they're going to use on it.
I like it. Great use of that. And I use it myself, but I haven't thought of it for that. So there you go. So we can definitely, once we've put your suggestions, we'll have a list of them, and then teachers could definitely download that app. That's an iPad and iPhone app. Is it on Android, do you know?
I think there is something like it. I don't know if it's exactly the same as it, but I believe so, yes.
Yeah, cool. Well, look, Bradley, were you going to say something before?
I was just going to build off of what you said about popping those into the lesson, like if the idea is repeated notes or melody mix-up or whatever, the creative concept. And I think of those concepts as little, you know, tricks in your bag or arrows in your quiver. Like, and Leela helps me name them. I mean, a definable, oh, I can do this. But I want, it's going to actually give you a real golden nugget here on how to actually do that, how to implement it. Teachers like structure. Here's structure. The word scat. Like scat singing, you know, that. Okay, SCAT is your acronym. So here's your four steps: specify, complement, ask questions, turn them loose. SCAT. Let me just break that down real quick. Specify. I want you to play This Old Man using only neighbor notes, you know. Okay, and then. After they do that, no matter whether it goes poorly or bad, or you find something to compliment. And because yep. when you're nurturing creativity, you're blowing on a little ember that you hope will take hold. And so you could always find something to compliment. I noticed you played with beautifully curved fingers if the notes didn't sound so great. Or even I've had students just fail to play at all. They just freak out, and I'd say, "What a marvelous use of silence in that improvisation." Okay, so you can find something to encourage, and then they realize, "Okay, it's safe. It's fine. You're not going to beat me up." And then the third step is to compliment. I'm sorry. The third step is ask questions, and that's where you demonstrate there's just not necessarily a better way to play, but there may be options they didn't consider. So you might say, you know, I noticed you used a lot of lower neighbor notes. Did you remember there's also upper neighbor notes? You know, okay. You just tease out the possibilities and you try that.
So that's the ask questions, is that right?
So, you know, specify, compliment, ask. Just basically you ask them to try it in a new way. Well, how would this sound in a different octave? How would it sound if you start, use dynamics? How would it sound with the pedal? How would it sound without the pedal? Louder, softer, in a different key? Put the melody in your left hand. I mean, just be inventive. And then the last one is to turn them loose. And so having spent a few minutes in the lesson exploring one doable, achievable baby step of an improvisation idea, you then say, next week, you know, I want you to come back and play This Old Man your own way. So work this out and try some things and show me what you come up with. So yeah. Another way to describe it is short leash, medium leash, no leash.
Yep, and it's exactly...
Musty what I say, okay, let's loosen it up and go for it.
Yep, and that aligns with, again, what Christopher Norton was saying too about, you know, just starting with one or two notes only, and then you slowly build it up a little bit further, and eventually you use the whole scale or whatever it is. I think it's great, and that's how we as adults, I think, like to learn as well. Just give me a little chunk that I can get comfortable with, and then give me some complimentary feedback, and then I'll try a little bit more. And that's exactly what you're saying.
Well said. Yeah. It has to be achievable. If it's not successful, then the fear sets in.
Yeah. So. Yep. No, that's great. And so I think we might move on to technology because we kind of started to. Get onto it, and so I think I had a question in mind, which was, do we need to have technology to be creative? And I think I can answer that one myself and say no, because we haven't really talked about it, but there's definitely obviously some use of iPads and things like that. So I wonder, Lily, you're probably the person to talk to, have you got some tools that teachers can use if they'd like to explore creativity?
Well, the first one is completely stolen from Bradley. Because he told me about iReel Pro, and I had never heard of it before then, and we use that all the time in our camp. I mean, that is continually rolling, and to me, it reminds me of this old program called Band in a Box that I was always afraid of, and I kind of used it a little bit, but I never really enjoyed using it, and now it's an app that... you know, I pull out all the time. I just did so in my presentation yesterday. So
you better, probably better tell teachers what it is. So it's okay. It's called iReel, iReal Pro, two words. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. And what does it actually do?
It's a lead sheet generator, and what you can do is basically turn it on, and it offers. I've got my iPad right here. But it has all these exercises in it that you can choose from. But what Bradley does is he will, like, here is his Billy Boy that he wanted me to practice. And so there it is in the key of D. If I want to change key, I can move it.
Hold it up a little bit higher. We'll be able to see it, I think.
There. So you can change key. But what I'll show you is that when you play it, can you hear that?
Yep.
So it's a backing track, and this is pop smooth. There's all kinds of different styles that can be plugged into that same chord progression.
Right. And can you put your own chords in if you've got a piece or a progression that you want to use?
Yes, you can write your own chord progressions. In fact, that was one of my summer activities for my students. They all had to learn a patriotic tune, and they had to choose chords to go with that tune, and then I had them create a lead sheet in iReel Pro, just so that they would have an idea of how it worked, and then they had to play along with the band.
What a great idea. I like that. I like that. It's a great summer idea.
Correct. You know, something new and different, and it gets them using this technology that most likely they will run into at some point. As another example, one of my adult students who had an iPad this morning, he was working on Satin Doll. It's an arrangement by Bill Evans. And his beat was not there. Couldn't really find where his four beats were in each measure. So we pulled out iReel Pro. And you can take off the piano and the bass parts and just have the drum going. And so it works like a really nice fancy metronome, but he, you know, it has that nice tick on beats 2 and 4, and his playing was so much straighter and tighter because of that. And it wasn't just because of just a nice I don't know, plain old metronome. It had that groove to it.
Really important.
I'm not using it nearly as much as Bradley does, but it's an amazing tool that I know a lot of professionals use all the time.
Mm. And does it come loaded with some lead sheets already? Like, you don't have to start from scratch, do you?
Correct. It has 50 exercises that come with it for free, and then there's a forum. And Bradley, you could maybe explain this a little bit better than me. Do you want to take over and explain about the forum?
Sure. It was invented by jazz musicians. So at first, the exercises and the first songs that were available on the forum were jazz standards. And so how this works is that musicians, when you go to all the trouble to put a popular song on there that you set the chords for, it's just kind of a nice courtesy to make it available to everybody else, so you can upload them to a forum and everybody else can download them. I want to make sure you understand that there's no copyright issues here at all, because these are only chord progressions. There's no melodies. It's just the sound of the band in the background. But after that, there became a lot of interest in pop styles, so they added things like soul and funk and styles like that. And now, then there was a request for bluegrass and Celtic and fiddle style. Both styles and tunes are available on the forum. And so, literally, the day I got it, I went to the forum, and in about 30 seconds, I had 1,300 jazz standards on my phone, which is just so wonderful. I practice with it every day, wherever I am, and my phone's in my pocket. I put on the headphones, and I've got this great grooving rhythm section. So I'm a huge fan of it. Nobody, there's no reason to endorse them. I have no business relationship with them. I just think it's an excellent tool.
Mm. And it comes for iPhone and iPad, doesn't it?
Yes.
And Android.
And Android. Fantastic. Yeah. Yeah, which is good, because I find that some of my students, most of them have iPads in the family somewhere that they can use, but sometimes they don't, but they more often than not have an iPhone. So that's a really great that it's on that and on Android, because that covers everyone else. So
On the laptop too, at least on a Mac laptop. So it's available on everything.
Okay, cool. And is it very expensive? Do you know how much it costs approximately?
$8.
$8, fantastic. Okay. And does that give you, is that everything, once you pay the $8, you get everything, or are there in-app purchases that you might need to pay for?
A little bit, very minor. You get some basic styles, and then if you want to add some style packs, I think it's like $5.
Yeah.
More, and okay. It's only three totally spent $15 more.
Yeah. Cool. No, it sounds great. Thank you. Good recommendation. We'll put a link to that app in the show notes, of course. And back to Leela, you mentioned Decide Now. I don't know if you wanted to talk to that anymore or any other ideas, but did you have any other recommendations too?
Okay, so Decide Now, do you want me to talk about that more or no?
We probably got the idea. I don't know if you had anything else to say about it or any other ways that you use it.
That one I have, let's see, you can make as many wheels as you want to, so I have a cuisine wheel.
Cuisine, as in cooking?
Yes, so I've got, you know, spaghetti and meatballs, cheese quesadilla. Those are great rhythms, cheese quesadilla, and just get students using words to be creative with when they can't come up with something on their own.
Right, and, yes.
Yeah, I know. You could put keys, you know. They spin for a key, and then they have to transpose a tune to a new key.
Yep. Good idea.
Tim, I know you're a fan of hook theory. You've written about
hook theory.
So based on your blog about that, I put in Roman numeral collections in my Decide Now, and now you can spin a chord progression. So if you can't think of a chord progression for a song you're writing, you give it a spin and see if you like it. I've used it that way as well.
So you put in like a four chord progression into one wheel, one part of the wheel, or like one, each part of the wheel has a different chord, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
That.
Okay.
Yeah. So you spin it, maybe get a 1, 1, a 5, and a 4. Okay. How is that going to sound?
Oh, that's a good idea. I like it. I hadn't thought of that one. I'm going to use that one for sure. That's great. No, it is a really fun app, and I've used it for rhythms and things like that. But I can see now there's a whole lot more potential in it. So I think that one's it's a couple of bucks, isn't it?
It's like 99 cents, isn't it? It's pretty cheap, I think. Maybe $2.
There you go. And they do. I think they have a free version, but you can't change the wheel. Oh, I think right. So. Mm-hmm. You can see how it works, but it's not very useful.
And one more plug for if you want more ideas, you can go to Clavier Companion. I don't remember what issue it is, but I do write about it in there, and I think there's about 6 ideas that I put in there.
Okay.
I have.
We might try and find the link to that, and pop it on the show notes, perhaps. I don't know. I don't know if they publish the article separately, or would they need to get a back issue if they wanted to look at that?
I think they'd have to get a back issue to find it.
Okay. I
don't remember what things they put in there, but I come up with something new all the time with that app. There's just always something. And you know what? While we're there, let's just talk about, I think when you teach creativity and you teach with technology, both of those things combined, I think, make for a more creative teacher. And I don't know if everyone can say that, but I can say that I really enjoy teaching because I like to think creatively about how I'm going to approach things. And that makes my job more interesting.
Yeah.
And my approach more interesting.
Yeah. I think that kind of idea of using technology to make your own practice, your own teaching more interesting, gosh, it's great, isn't it? And as I've said in some of my own training videos, you know, you've got to expect some epic fails as well. Oh, thank you. I was hoping you couldn't hear it.
I wanted to acknowledge the elephant in the room.
I've got a good microphone. No, that's great, Leela. So, any other apps that you want to mention at the moment, Leela?
You know, let me show you one other one. It's called My Rhythm, and especially when students have issues with just deciding on what to do with a normal rhythm, you can do something really fun with something called My Rhythm, and I put it in create mode. Have you seen this one before?
I've seen the app, but I haven't used that mode.
All right. So if you, I'm not going to go into detail, but basically, there's these squares. You can decide on adding some dots wherever you'd like to. There's 2 dots for each square, so one level is for the right hand, one is for the left hand, and when you push play, it's got a fun little groove to go along with it. And now I'm not playing along with it right now, but if I do, I don't know if you can hear that at all, but
yeah, I can. Yep.
It just created a really cool syncopated rhythm that students could play first on the app, take it over to the piano. Maybe they're working on some kind of thing where they've got fifths in one hand and a melody in the other. And we didn't talk about notation. We didn't battle counting dotted quarter notes or eighth notes or eighth rests, but they have a really fun rhythm. And I can't say enough about that app. It's there's no notation, and yet they can play really tricky rhythms with it. So
that's a really great recommendation. It's called My Rhythm, is that right?
My Rhythm, yes.
Great, and we'll put a link to that on the show notes as well. I'm familiar with it. I haven't really mucked around with it too much, so it might be cool for you when we put the show notes out just to list a couple of ways that you use it like that, because I think often when we recommend, or I recommend an app to a teacher, I'll say, this is the best app ever, and they'll come back to me a month later and go, I don't know what to do. Like, it looks great, but I don't know what to do with it, sort of thing.
Okay.
I was going to say, was there anything else as well?
You know, there's plenty I could go on to. I don't know how many more you want me to do. I would say that there's one that I wish I had time to use every day, and that one's called Better Ears. I don't know if you've heard that one before.
No, that's all new to me.
This one I like because I was looking for something that would test chord progressions. I could not find an app that would just test ear training of, you know, going from a 1 to a 4 or a 5 to a 4 chord or whatever. And this one does that. And
you can hold up a bit higher.
Okay. Yes. You can customize the levels. It's really hard to see as far as what's going on, but I highly recommend this one because, yes, it will test chord progressions. You can design your own chord progressions for students to listen to as well. It's very customizable. It's not inexpensive, but I would say it's one that I have not found that will do. I haven't found anything else that will do what this app can do.
Oh, fantastic. And by testing chord progressions, you mean the app will play a chord progression, might move from a 1 chord to a 4 chord, 5 chord, that sort of thing, and the student has to listen and recognize that progression. Is that right?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. That's brilliant. I don't know how, what the last year of school, the musicians that do what we call the VCE here in Melbourne, so year 12 students studying music, they have an oral component to that exam, and it's very difficult. And one of the things they have to recognise is chord progressions. I'm really interested in that app, and I'll share that with some other people and explore it. What was it called again?
It's called Better Ears.
Cool. Oh, that's great. Well, look, as you say, look, there's probably, we could probably go through 10, 20 more, but at least that gets everyone started. And I know they can find out heaps more about all your app recommendations on your blog, because I go there myself for tips too. And that's at 88keys.me, is that right?
88pianokeys.me.
88, yep. Thank you. 88pianokeys.me. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. They'll be at timtopham.com/episode5. Sorry. All right. So, look, I thought we should talk a little bit about the camp, because I've heard of this Creative Keys camp that you guys run, and unfortunately, not being a local in America, I haven't been to one, but I wondered if you could tell other people about it, because I think it's coming up shortly. So, I don't know. Brad, did you want to speak to that?
Well, sure. This is our third year, and it's, I think, a one-of-a-kind camp because it focuses exclusively on keyboard improvisation. The figuring is that while we're both about balancing the eye, the reading eye with the listening ear, the assumption is that students are already learning to read and teachers are already used to teaching reading. It's the other side where they need support. So we offer two camps this year. We've had as many as three in the past, but we dropped for a number of reasons that the kind of a younger student kid camp in favor of intermediate 12 and up intermediate pianist camp, where they're going to focus this year on the Beatles, Boogie, and Blues. They're going to walk away being able to play those specific styles a little better.
Okay.
And then we also have a teacher camp the next 3 days. It's a three-day camp. It's immersive. It's all day long, including meals and everything. We never stop, in which we will focus on just sort of tips like I gave earlier about SCAT and some of these details about creative concepts and looking at my books and just how do you really do this? How do you prepare your students for jazz band? You know, just the whole caboodle about not so much what it is, but how do you teach it? So it's the pedagogy. And you know, we have a ball. Lila gets them off the bench, doing all kinds of marching around the room and we do some drumming and everybody's on their own piano. So they were learning all day long with, you know, playing it. It's really one of a kind. We're very fortunate that, we've run it, you know, the last couple of years and it sold out each time in Denver. Mm-hmm. We did it here in my hometown, and it didn't do so well. We only had 4 attendees.
Okay.
And so that old prophet in your old town left and hit home hard. I was like, you know what? You guys, they love us. So, but yeah, what do you want to add to that, Lila?
Well, we did, okay, the teacher track wasn't as popular, but the keyboard track was popular. The piano track.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's right. We only had 4 teachers. We had a good turnout for the student track. I forgot.
Okay, so where and when are these being held? Maybe Lila, if you know the dates.
It is July 6th through 11th, and I am fortunate to have a wonderful church facility, and they're very generous to us, and they let us take over one of their sanctuaries. This church happens to be around for, it's been around for quite some time, and they have three sanctuaries. And okay. The second one, they took out all the pews, and it's this huge room. It's gigantic. And we set up our keyboards, and we're all spread out. We've got plenty of room for drum circles, for lunch tables. We spend pretty much the whole day in there, but it feels like we've done, you know, gone all over the place because there's it's such a marvelous facility. And there's other pianos there, so if we have private lessons, someone can go take a lesson on a nice piano. It's a great facility. It is not residential, meaning people still have to find a place to stay, and we try and accommodate their needs as much as we can. And this year, yes, we're adding breakfast and lunch will both be provided, which we're happy about because I was trying to do a lot of that last year. And it's hard to wear a lot of hats. It's busy. It's a busy week.
Yeah. Okay. So where can people find out more information about this camp?
They can go to 88creativekeys.com and they will find out pretty much everything they may need to know, but we're happy to answer questions. It is $450 for 3 days, depending on which camp you want to go to. We do have teachers that end up going to both the pianist track and the teacher track, and that's why we try and keep them somewhat different and unique so that they're inspired to go to both. And we were surprised that teachers wanted to do that. We were not prepared initially, or no, I wouldn't say prepared, but we were surprised that they wanted to come to both, and we're thrilled that they do. And I can see why, because you do want to accumulate new skills yourself as a teacher. But the good news is all of the books are included in this price. Like I said, the food, the keyboards are there for them to use. And there's also discounts. We have an early bird discount of $50 off, and if you bring a friend, you can get another $50 off. So we're trying to make it as affordable as possible and still make it doable for us, because we both have to drop everything and do nothing but think 88 Creative Keys for a week.
I would say we have to do that for a year, because there's all this planning. By the way, what a lot of people do, because it's near the beautiful Rocky Mountains, several of the teachers last year either went to there before or after and sort of played in the mountains a little bit, made a vacation of it, and then zoomed down for 3 days of fun. So the location helps us a lot with people mixing it into their summer recreation.
I think I'm going to have to just move to the States for a year and try and get along to all these conferences and events that I can't do from over here. It sounds like it's going to be great fun. So I'll put the links to the camp and the information and that discount that you mentioned as well on the show notes. So thank you guys for that.
And thank you. So we appreciate that.
No worries at all. And look, we'll start wrapping up now, but I did want to mention, Leela, you've got an ebook out, which is quite a cool new take on intervals. And I thought we might just mention that quickly and let people know how they can get a hold of that too.
Well, thank you. That was all started from my idea of wanting my students to play Happy Birthday. And it's not an easy tune to learn by ear. And that's how I wanted them to start learning the tune. So I figured they needed to know their intervals. They needed to be able to identify them on the keyboard and also hear them. So that's what triggered this book. And I created it over Christmas vacation. And I had so much fun. But since it was my first one, I was kind of guessing how I was going to do all of it. I thought, you know what, I want other people to benefit from it, but I better just let people have it for free, although it was a lot of my hard-earned time. And, but I love it, and I would love for people to use it. And actually what I use it for is a flipped classroom approach. I let my students read through it. You can hear different examples. It's very interactive. And that way they can read it first, then you can talk about it at a lesson.
Well, I was going to say, I'd say that the big thing that I really enjoyed was I was picturing an ebook, just a PDF bit of digital paper. But no, it has all these. It's got recordings of videos and you speaking, and so it's obviously taken a lot of work. And the fact that you're giving it away for free is fantastic.
Well, thank you. And it's very easy to sign up for it. Just go to 88pianokeys.me and there's a little form on the edge there. And I also think that I've got a little pop-up, so it's going to ask you to sign up for my newsletter. If you do that, you will get a link to it as well.
So. Great. And look, I can highly recommend Leela's newsletter as well. It's a great resource, and the blog posts you're putting out are fantastic, Leela. So thank you for the work that you do in that. Now, I was going to just finish off. I'm just having a quick look through my notes because when we're talking about some of those steps, Brad, with you, and we've talked about a couple of them, but there was two others there. I don't know if we can really quickly, because we're running out of time, but really quickly talk about them. You mentioned something about sandwiches. Can you elaborate on that?
So... Actually, let me instead leave you with this resource. These kinds of questions you're asking, teachers, I get this a lot where they say, I'm pretty comfortable with teaching this creativity, but I don't know how to go about it. And in my new series, Creative Chords, Leela mentioned the flipped classroom. I use that same approach, and we're really excited about this. The book is not just a 150-page book. It's a substantial book, but it has... a special link through a code to student and teacher access to videos of me teaching. And the idea is that teachers have said, look, I don't know how to present these ideas. Okay, I hear you. I'll present them. And so the assignment is the student comes and watches me teach it, and then in the lesson time is spent applying it, helping them put it into a tune. And I just think this is the way that things are going with. It's the way math is being taught. It's the go watch this TED talk, and then we'll discuss the philosophy in class. I could hit that form, but really, there's just loads of that. I suppose it seems like, here's the thing. Authors are always talking about their books, and it says, I just want to put this out there. Teachers may feel like, it's always just something to sell. I'm so sick of hearing about this. authors who have published books actually take a very small percentage. It's no one's going to retire on the book sales. The real reason I'm passionate about telling people about my new project is because what Leela just said, your heart and soul's in them, your philosophy's out there, you've seen what works with the world. It's none of us, right? Nobody's here forever, and you want to leave some kind of legacy. You want to feel like you mattered. That's what drives my desire to let everybody know about what we're doing with our camps and our books and our projects. I think that I know that we're on the right path with using every means possible to introduce and balance creativity with also the traditional reading approach. And I just want to separate the, it sounds like you're selling, for me, it's, look, if I never sold another book, I would be far from starving. I just want you to know about these great ideas.
Yeah, and ditto, I think Leela and I can both agree with the work that we do on our blogs and stuff. It's exactly the same. Like, we've got great ideas, let's get them out there. Exactly. So, no, I appreciate that, Brad. Okay, well, let's finish up. I was just going to mention the next time and the first time we're all going to meet in person at the National Conference of Keyboard Pedagogy. I'm so excited about that. And you guys are running a creativity session. Pre-conference seminar, I think. That's the 29th, I think, of July. Is that right?
Correct. Yes. Yeah.
So I'm definitely going to be there. I can't wait. It's going to be great fun. And I'd recommend as many people as possible, obviously, get to the NCKP. I'll put the link to it on the show notes as well, and a link to your information about your session, because I think that's going to be the one to be at. And I think Forrest Kinney's going to be there, isn't he?
Correct. And we had a practice run through of what we're going to do at NCKP. We did a run through last summer at SMU, Southern Methodist University. Sam Holland runs an institute for piano teachers. And so it was basically Bradley, Forrest, and me. And for 3 or 4 days, people were immersed in creativity in all different kinds of ways. And it was hands-on. In front of keyboards a great deal of the time, and it was fantastic. We got glowing reports. People really loved it, and they loved it because they went home with so many ideas, and it was interactive, and they could try it out there, and that's exactly what we hope to bring at NCKP. There will be 32 keyboards. we'll probably have two people at a keyboard, but that's because then we can have 64 people there and get as many people as we can, so we want them all to be filled up. And then there, what's really unique is after a session during the actual conference, we are going to have opportunities for teachers to practice what they've just heard Forrest or Bradley or even I say in the lab. And Forrest or Bradley or I will be in the lab, the keyboard lab as well, to help anybody and answer questions. So
fantastic.
Yeah, we hope it to be as helpful and immersive and dynamic as possible.
That sounds good. I'm looking forward to it. And I might as well put a plug in for my, just before you say, go on, Brad, plug in for my own presentation, which is during the main conference. And that's all about my take on pop piano teaching and why it's the thing that we should all be doing and those links with theory and all that kind of stuff. So hopefully you guys can get along to that one as well.
Good. I was just going to say that the people may be wondering, well, geez, they're going to be at NCKP and they also have 88 Creative Keys. Which one should I go to? In one case, the correct answer is both, of course. But given reality of time and schedules and financial considerations, here's your thinking. Whereas last summer's SMU Institute for Piano Teachers was immersive in creativity, at NCKP, the tops that you get is four sessions, and then you have a lot of other subjects. So NCKP will offer a whole bunch of different takes in wonderful ways with different kinds of piano considerations. But at best, even though we're given everything we got, the sessions are, there just aren't enough of them to totally live it. So the difference is that our camp is completely immersive. You're just drinking in creativity at the piano all day exclusively. It's exhausting but exhilarating. So I don't, you know, it's hard to recommend which one because I think they're both useful. But it's one is sort of a overview or a smorgasbord of pedagogy, and ours is very specifically under a laser focus of this one area of teaching.
Yep, no, that makes good sense. All right, well, I think we'll wrap it up. I'll put links to both your blogs and all that kind of stuff on the show notes. And I think I'm right in thinking, Bradley, that you offer Skype lessons. So if teachers are interested, wherever they are, Australians or whoever, they can connect with you on Skype. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, I like doing that. It's I have limited availability for that, but I make special considerations for teachers, because when I teach a teacher to do this, I end up teaching 30 other people, so that feels good, because in other words, like, they're the top of the pyramid of their students.
That's it. Yeah, that's why I definitely enjoy working with other teachers too. It's good fun. Okay, I reckon we'll wrap it up there. It's been a long session. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it, and I hope all the listeners have got lots of new ideas out of it. And we'll have all those details at timtopham.com/episode5. Which is where we'll have those checklists of ideas and all that kind of stuff. And I think what I might say is, if anyone has questions for you guys, they can leave a comment on the show notes, and I'll just forward them to you, and you can pop on and perhaps reply to them if they've got any questions. Is that all right with you guys?
Yes.
It sounds great. And Tim, it's been a treat for me, and I know Leela, I'll let her speak for herself, but I'm honored to be on the one of the early shows of what promises to be a historic music-changing podcast.
Thank you, Bradley. That's awesome.
You know, you're doing this on your vacation, so we appreciate this. This is really good for us, good exposure for us, so we appreciate your time.
You're welcome.
And can't see you in July. When are you coming? Tell me your
schedule. I'm arriving in Chicago on the 26th or thereabouts, so I'll be around a little bit before the conference. We can catch up if you're around.
Okay. And then do you leave?
Pretty much the day of the final day of the conference. I've got to get back to teach, unfortunately.
Okay. Yeah, do we talk? All right.
Yeah. We'll talk more about it later. Anyway, thanks, guys. I'm going to sign off and say, yeah, a huge thank you so much for your time.
Okay. Thanks, Tim.
See you later. Thank you.
Goodbye.
See you later, readers. Well, listeners, I have another episode for you in a couple of weeks' time. Stay tuned. Thanks.